violence. And then Hugh Romney says, man, Joe Boyd is about as hip as day camp.
Congress, in its wisdom, has prohibited pirate operators, that is, people who operate without licenses, from ever owning a low-power station. On the other hand, that same pirate could own, for example, WCBS-TV in New York City.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM. ICRA.
Listening to the test site of Acoustic Commons, available at wavefarm.org/listen, or on any wgxc.org webpage if you click on the listen button. The test site of Acoustic Commons is a microphone in the Wavefarm woods that lets you overhear the sounds of nature, the live weather, on the radio at wavefarm.org/listen, or click on any wgxc.org webpage. Click on the listen button to hear the sounds in the woods at Wave Farm through the test site of Acoustic Commons.
Hey, this is Andy, host of Crawl Out from the Fallout with Raven Sings the Blues. The show is a monthly roundup of new music plumbing psych, folk, cosmic Americana, indie, garage, and exploratory titles alongside enough classic gems to hold it all together like glue. You can tune into the show every second Tuesday of the month from 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Survive All, one of the nation's leading manufacturers of fallout shelters, now combines sturdy steel with durable concrete block for
a civil defense approved basement type do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Ensure protection for your family. See a Survive All shelter today.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Johnny Sturman of Lexington, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
I was just going to lie down for 5 minutes, take a little nap.
Yeah, a regular Rip Van Winkle.
Who?
Another guy who took a little nap, woke up, and didn't know where he was.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. WNYT reports that former Prattsville Town Supervisor Corey O'Hara was sentenced December 8th to 1 year of probation and a $25,000 fine in restitution for wire fraud. O'Hara pleaded guilty in July to the scheme to get grant money for work that was not done in the wake of Tropical Storm Irene. O'Hara admitted to obtaining false invoices from a home business claiming to show work done on his automotive garage and service station when the work was not done by that company, and O'Hara kept the money. O'Hara's lawyer recently asked a judge in the case for just probation, saying the publicity of the case was punishment enough. O'Hara's attorney, Lauren Owens, said, and I quote, "The local press has caused him to lose customers and affected his reputation in Prattsville. O'Hara has been adequately deterred from any future criminal conduct, and there is no need to protect the public from any future crimes by Mr. O'Hara," end quote. Read more about this story at the WNYT website. Joe Mahoney reports in the Press Republican that Representative Elise Stefanik was the only member of the House Republican leadership team to vote on December 8th in favor of a final measure giving federal recognition to same-sex and interracial unions. Only 39 Republican representatives voted with all 219 Democrats for the Respect for Marriage Act. Stefanik spokesperson Palmer Brigham said the Congresswoman's vote is in line with, and I quote, "her views on how states should respect concealed carry permits and military family spousal licensing, just as she believes concealed carry permit should be recognized from state to state. This bill will ensure if a marriage is recognized in one state, it is recognized in another," end quote. Brigham added, and I quote, "The bill includes important provisions to uphold religious liberty and not encroach on the sincerely held beliefs of Americans," end quote. Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro, a Republican who begins representing New York's 19th Congressional District in January, said he would have supported the legislation. Democrats Paul Tonko and Pat Ryan also voted for the bill. And you can read the full story in the Press Republican. Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times Union that Governor Kathy Hochul last week signed a new law mandating that fees paid to New York by solar companies that convert agricultural land into solar farms will now go toward preserving other farmland. The fees previously went into the general fund, but now the money goes to the Agricultural and Farmland Viability Protection Fund, created by a bill sponsored by State Senator Michelle Henchy. The Saugerties Democrat got the bill unanimously accepted in both the State Senate and Assembly last summer. Since the year 2000, 750 large commercial or industrial solar projects have been funded through the state, according to the New York State Energy Research and Development Agency. Henchy said, and I quote, "I look forward to ensuring that we continue to work to create a future centered on locally sourced healthy food and incentivize smart solar development without eliminating our finite agricultural resources, end quote. And you can read the full story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXE.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXE sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXE Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
In the Georgia Senate runoff, people power beats voter suppression. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast.
It is my honor to utter the four most powerful words ever spoken in a democracy. The people have spoken.
That's Senator Raphael Warnock speaking Tuesday night before a cheering crowd after winning the runoff election for the U.S. Senate in Georgia. Warnock ran against Republican Herschel Walker, a retired football star. Walker, recruited to run by former President Donald Trump, proved to be a deeply flawed candidate. Nevertheless, the Warnock campaign had to overcome a complex array of voter suppression laws and tactics deployed by Georgia Republicans.
There are those who would look at the outcome of this race and say that there's no voter suppression in Georgia.
Senator Warnock continued.
Let me be clear. Just because people endured long lines that wrapped around buildings, some blocks long, just because they endured the rain and the cold and all kinds of tricks in order to vote, doesn't mean that voter suppression does not exist. It simply means that you, the people, have decided that your voices will not be silenced.
Donald Trump's defeat in 2020 and the unprecedented election 2 months later of Reverend Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff, the first African-American and Jewish senators elected in Georgia, control of the Senate went to the Democrats. The Republican-controlled Georgia legislature responded, quickly passing SB 202, the Election Integrity Act of 2021. It restricted the time between a general election and a runoff, made it harder to get an absentee ballot, and even made it a crime to hand water to someone waiting hours in line to vote. The turnout for this year's December 6 runoff election was historic. Republicans attempted to restrict early, in-person voting as much as possible, including on the Saturday after Thanksgiving. The justification used to eliminate that vital weekend day was that it followed observance of State Holiday 1, the new term for what was, until 2015, Georgia's holiday celebrating the birthday of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. The Warnock campaign sued, and the state Supreme Court overturned Georgia's new rules.
That weekend wound up being one of the largest voting turnout weekends in the history.
That's Latasha Brown, co-founder of the Black Voters Matter Fund, speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. That the courts have a say in how Georgia runs its elections seems perfectly reasonable. But the ability of courts or governors to weigh in on election laws passed by state legislatures is at risk. On Wednesday, the U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments in Moore v. Harper, a case in which the Republican-controlled North Carolina state legislature is arguing that neither state courts nor the governor can question any election legislation, including redistricting maps passed by the legislature. The case was brought after the North Carolina Republicans' post-2020 heavily gerrymandered congressional map was overturned by the state Supreme Court. If this so-called independent state legislature theory is upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court, it would mark a radical shift in U.S. election law and one of the most fundamental threats to democracy in modern history. Efforts to suppress the vote are rampant nationally. The Brennan Center for Justice is tracking at least 405 restrictive voter suppression bills and 151 election interference bills, all introduced at the state level in 2022. If the Supreme Court decides in favor of the independent state legislature theory, these laws couldn't be vetoed by governors nor reviewed by state courts. Speaking on Democracy Now!, Georgia-based Cliff Albright, co-founder and executive director of Black Voters Matter, said of the case,
"This could be the final nail in the concept of democracy in this country if these state legislatures are able to run rogue without having any kind of accountability."
These voter suppression laws are just the latest front in the war on democracy. For so long following the Civil War and Reconstruction, white supremacist violence and terrorism, lynchings and Jim Crow laws like poll taxes and literacy tests were used to disenfranchise voters of color. Raphael Warnock's win is the first time an African-American Democrat has been elected to a full term in the U.S. Senate from the former Confederacy.
"I am a proud son of Savannah, Georgia. A coastal city known for its verdant town squares and its cobblestone streets. Tall, majestic oak trees dripping with Spanish moss."
Warnock said in his victory speech Tuesday,
"My roots, like the roots of those oak trees, go deep down into the soil of Savannah and Waycross and Scriven County and Burke County. I am Georgia. I am an example and an iteration of its history, of its pain and its promise, of the brutality and the possibility."
The task before any American who supports the principle of democracy is to engage in grassroots action to expand the possibility of which Senator Warnock speaks and to eliminate the brutality. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
Catskill Schools announced on December 8th that after a week out of schools because of a water main issue, middle school students returned to classrooms December 12th, but not in the high school. Interim Superintendent Thomas Bon Jovi wrote on the school district's website, and I quote, that Monday, December 12th, CMS and CHS will operate on a two-hour daily schedule where classes will begin at 9:35 a.m. CES will still be running on their normal schedule. All students will enter the main entrance of CHS, end quote. The water main issue closed the middle school and high school on December 5th and had middle school students studying remotely the rest of the week. See the Catskill School website for more information.
This is the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional seats in New York. Current Democratic Representative Paul Tonko from the 20th District votes with the positions of President Joe Biden 100% of the time, according to the 538.com website. Republican Elise Stefanik, currently representing the 21st District, votes with Biden's positions 19.3% of the time. Democrat Pat Ryan just began representing the 19th Congressional District and has yet to be included in the 538 rankings. Ryan will represent the 18th Congressional District in January, when Republican Mark Molinaro takes over representing the 19th Congressional District.
Kevin Frey in New York State of Politics speaks with Dutchess County Executive Mark Molinaro, recently elected to represent New York's 19th Congressional District. Republican Molinaro claims the midterm results show Americans want leaders to work together, taking away Democrats' control of the House of Representatives. Molinaro said, and I quote, "It is our responsibility not only to provide the checks and balances and results here in Washington, but I think also to speak up when Albany acts in a way that New Yorkers don't feel is appropriate for them," end quote. New York was key for Republicans flipping the House, with four districts switching from Democrats after the votes were counted. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics.
Mid-Hudson News is reporting that a group of Hudson Valley Democratic Party chairs has written to longtime state chair Jay Jacobs, asking him to implement 4 common-sense reforms to increase Democratic operations, provide robust support for county committees, expand and diversify the voices involved in decision-making, and strengthen the party's infrastructure ahead of the next election cycle. The general election this month saw mixed results in the Hudson Valley, ranging from successes in Ulster and Westchester counties to, quote, disappointing outcomes, unquote, for statewide candidates in several counties, as well as the loss of state legislative and congressional seats previously held by Democrats. Last week, 2 letters were circulated, one calling on Jacobs to step down from his party leadership role, and the other from county chairs offering their continued support. The members of the Greater Hudson Valley Coalition declined to sign on to either letter. That group wrote their own letter to Jacobs asking state leadership to convene a session of the State Democratic Committee's Executive Committee before the end of the year to present, discuss, and adopt a plan to implement their reforms. The letter is signed by Columbia County Chair Sam Hodge, Lori Turgeson of Greene County, Michael Dupree and Julie Shiroshi of Dutchess County, and Kaylee McKenzie of Ulster County, and others. Read more about the story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Mid-Hudson News reports that while Pat Ryan currently represents the 19th Congressional District in the House of Representatives, he is about to change to the 18th Congressional District in January. Ryan won a special election in August to fill in the final weeks of Representative Antonio Delgado's term in the 19th District after he left to become Lieutenant Governor. Ryan then was elected for a full term in the new 18th Congressional District in November, which means he switches districts in January. On November 28th, Ryan was more in 18th congressional district mode, speaking just outside of West Point in support of passage of the National Defense Authorization Act. Quote, when it comes to our veterans, our military families, we have to rise above this partisan divide we have in our country right now, come together as patriots and make sure that we deliver in keeping our country safe and supporting our troops and our military families, unquote, he said. In particular, Ryan said, $39.8 million would go towards the continuing construction of the $200 million West Point Cyber and Engineering Center, and $1.6 million would upgrade barracks and child development centers at West Point if the National Defense Authorization Act was passed in its current state. There's also a 4.6% pay raise for active duty members and civilians in the bill. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com. Steve Bennin reports for MSNBC that Representative Elise Stefanik is keeping up her full-throated defense of former President Donald Trump, but is so far mum on his dinner with a leading figure among white supremacists and anti-Semites. After Attorney General Merrick Garland appointed Jack Smith to oversee the criminal investigation into Trump, the former president ordered his backers to defend him, saying, quote, you people have to fight, you have to fight, you have to be strong, unquote. So on November 29th, Stefanik told the far-right Breitbart News that, quote, the facts are clear. Jack Smith is compromised. Joe Biden's weaponized DOJ has launched an illegitimate special counsel to investigate his number one political opponent, unquote. She said, when Republicans take over the House of Representatives in January, they will launch a counter-investigation, although she did not say exactly what they would investigate. Meanwhile, Stefanik is quiet so far on Trump's dinner meeting with notorious anti-Semites Kanye West and Nick Fuentes. PBS NewsHour asked 57 Republican lawmakers for comment on that meeting, and Stefanik is one of the many not responding with any comment about the former president meeting with fringe political figures with hateful political views. Stefanik represents the 21st Congressional District in New York that includes Rensselaer County. Read more about this story at the MSNBC website.
Carl Campanelli is reporting for the New York Post that Republican Representative Elise Stefanik is accusing U.S. Postal Service workers of opening her campaign mail and stealing $20,000 in campaign checks. Stefanik, the House GOP conference chair, made the claim in a December 1st letter to Postmaster General Louis DeJoy. Quote, we are writing you on behalf of our clients, Congresswoman Elise Stefanik and her campaign committee, Elise for Congress, concerning the repeated targeted theft of campaign contributions from packages sent through the United States Postal Service, unquote, wrote attorney Michael Toner. Toner alleged that on 4 occasions between June and November this year, packages sent by the Elise for Congress committee containing campaign contributions were ripped open and the contents taken on the custody of the post office or its contractors. The attorney further alleged that in addition to the loss of campaign contributions, hundreds of Stefanik supporters were exposed to potential identity theft or financial fraud. It is unclear if any of the stolen checks were cashed. The U.S. Postal Service or of the inspector general is investigating the mail theft, but Toner and said the IG's office, quote, which recovered the discarded ripped open packages in Memphis, has not returned our client's calls, unquote. Stefanik is demanding the Postal Service provide her with a full update by December 8th on what has been done to date in investigating the thefts and what measures it will take to prevent or prosecute mail theft against her and other Americans in the future. Postal Service spokesperson Dave Partenheimer said, quote, we did receive a letter on December 1st from representatives of Elise for Congress, and we will respond to the senator directly with our findings on this investigative matter. In matters like this, both the Postal Inspection Service and Office of Inspector General have a potential role to play, unquote. Read more about this story in the New York Post.
Kenneth C. Crow II reports in the Times Union that the floating solar array for Coho City Reservoir is not in the water yet, but Representative Paul Tonko wants to create similar projects across the nation. Tonko is introducing legislation for federal support to replicate the project. Tonko, a Democrat representing the 20th Congressional District, said on December 2nd, and I quote, the innovative project in Cohoes shined a light on the advantages of floating solar to reach our nation's renewable energy goals and reduce bills for families and communities. Since the inception of this project, I've said that Cohoes Reservoir will serve as a model for the nation, and with my Power Our Reservoirs Act that I just introduced, it will do just that, end quote. Cohoes Mayor Bill Keeler predicts that the $5.9 million array with 8,000 solar panels will be floating in the fall of 2024 or the spring of 2025. Keeler said, and I quote, we said from the start this could be a national model. We've been working with the congressman. He's been super enthusiastic and a great help to us financially, end quote. Tonko says a 2018 study by the National Renewable Energy Laboratory found that deploying floating solar on the county's more than 24,000 human-made reservoirs could save 2.1 million hectares of land and meet 10% of the country's electricity needs. Solar arrays in water cost more than land-based systems, but have other benefits, including reducing algal blooms. Read the full story in the Times Union.
This has been the WGXC Congressional Report, tracking the votes, statements, positions, and campaigns of the representatives and candidates for the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st congressional seats in New York. Go to WGXC.org for more information.
And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, sunny with a high near 36 degrees. There will be increasing clouds on Saturday night with a temperature low of around 23 degrees. And on Sunday, there will be snow mainly after 1 p.m. with a temperature high near 34 degrees. And more snow Sunday night mainly before 1 a.m. with a temperature low of around 27 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Unsilent Night is an original composition by Phil Klein, written specifically to be heard outdoors in the month of December. He's been holding them at various cities around the world since 1992. Special composition for boombox radios, where multiple speakers make one shimmering seasonal composition. This year, one of the locations for Unsilent Night is in Kingston, New York. That's on December 16th from 6 to 7 p.m. Go to unsilentnight.com for more information about the specific location that will be announced shortly. Go to the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org for more information about all sorts of local events.
Most radio shows don't come with a demonstration, but most radio shows aren't Radio Wonderland.
Greatest hits. What's love got to do? Got to do, 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 got to do.
Right, so then I take more pieces of live radio, slice them, fit them into the groove, and then in a few minutes you get something like It's radio made completely out of radio. I'm Joshua, but you just call me Radio Wonderland.
10:30 a.m. Saturday mornings till 11. Some restrictions
apply. WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Nora E. Edelman of Athens, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Accra, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still, following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC, hands-on, listener-supported radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
All the German lights, this is it, the night of nights. No more rehearsing and nursing apart, we know every card by heart. All the German lights, this is it, we'll hit the heights, and oh what heights we'll hit. On with the show, this is it.
from New Orleans. That was Quintron and Meet Me at the Clubhouse. And you can meet Quintron at BSP in Kingston on Friday, November 1st, and also with a live broadcast on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. Next, we tune in the latest episode of the I Have Seen Niagara radio theater show from G. Lucas Crane and Rick Royer. The show airs Saturday mornings on the WGXC morning show between 9 and 10 a.m. and every early Wednesday night just after midnight.
England. A Victorian tyrant lives in her castle and is obsessed with beautiful lacework, as per the ancient custom. She conscripts a coterie of small children to be trained in the art of lace making. Day in, day out, they make the lace for her in the basement, a veritable lace dungeon. Pin cushions and looms sit next to thumb screws and the rack. The girls never have time off, not even on Catherine's Day. She surrounds herself with increasingly intricate lacework, draping herself in it, running it over her face, eyes closed, standing naked before the morning sun pouring through the stone-slit windows, wrapped only in the finest lace, lace made by the abuse and conscription of children. If a lace child did not keep up the necessary speed in lace-making, the tyrant would bind her eyes and ears, put pins in her feet, and she had to keep making the lace in the dark, immobile. If a lace child performed her duties with speed and quality, she may sit by the window, and she may have a cookie, one per week, and she may have the tea dregs, but never shall she stop making the lace. The tyrant's husband was a blovating dandy, obsessed with Egyptian esoteric and occult practices. He was a member of the Golden Dawn, the Hyboreal Kingdom, and the Idolic Order of the Twelve Flames. He spent most of his time decanting drugs in his castle laboratory. He was already an addict of the drugs that removed him from this mortal plane. Another drug made him speak very fast, and one drug made him see things only half there, and one drug made him so sensitive that he could hear you speaking in the garden from the top of the castle. One day, the tyrant received the latest batch of lace from below, and she pulled it out of the box to let it drape across her face and body in her usual ritual. She disrobed to pull the fastest lace across her skin. But one of the girls, one who had fallen far behind, the one who was most abused and harangued, the one who was most rebellious, the one who sat in the corner with her eyes and feet bound, the one kept furthest from the fresh air, had used her punished hands, flitting across the lace pillow with a sightless technique born on the back of passionate hatred for her tormentor. A technique from deep in her bones, she felt the hands of her mother and grandmother, long dead, guiding her in the darkness. This girl wove into the lace a series of rusted shavings that she had pulled from her own boots, bound in the lace in the form of a seven-pointed star, a symbol she remembered from her father's vestments. She remembered when he came dressed for battle to retrieve her, when the tyrant's magistrate had taken her from the storehouse. She remembered how angry her father was, and the cursed look in his eyes when the tyrant's men had struck him down. Her hands had woven these rusted shards into the family pattern, a curse to be applied directly to the tyrant's skin. As the tyrant pulled the lace across her body, the shards embedded in her skin at seven points, forming the heptagram of familial revenge, and she felt the fetid poison of rust and offal enter her. She was enraged. The tyrant grabbed up her golden whip and rushed to the dungeon workshop. She flayed the little girl brutally, but she was arrogant, crazed. Crazed with the idea that her skin had been defiled, and that the lace had been turned against her. So in between strikes of the whip, she got close to the bound little girl to gloat and spit upon her. And in that moment, the little girl saw her chance. She pulled out a needle she had dipped in rat blood, a rat she had found in the darkness, one that had come to her, whispered to her of revenge, and died of explosive pustules. The tyrant was shocked to be struck so, her skin further violated, her lace marred by spreading blood. She yelped and whimpered suddenly like an animal and ran back to her tower. Over the next few nights, she wrapped more and more lace around her to cover the encroaching pustules that began to consume her. The tumors were painful, a pain only abated by a covering of lace.
Covered in lace. Covered in lace.
She added more lace as the pain and deformation increased.
Forever bound in lace. Forever bound in lace.
Her husband heard her skin from the garden. It was so loud. And he found her in her lace tower. He had just taken several massive doses of a new concoction of his drugs via an electrical and steam-powered drug alchemy throne machine of his own design. He could now see auras and smell time. He found her covered in her lace and her body underneath marred with oozing pustules. To him, she looked like a pharaoh ready for the sarcophagus. Like the one he had seen while in Egypt, while he was robbing the graves of kings. He looked through space and time, and he knew what to do. He took her into his laboratory, placed her on his throne, and removed her organs according to the old rites. Rites that were not his, and so he perverted them horribly, and he mummified her in her lace. And so the tyrant was transported through time, cursed by those she had tormented, and doomed to return, a mummy wrapped in lace. It seemed impossible that something like that was now in a pine box in the back of a Toyota Tacoma in Niagara Falls, New York. Grace stood in the motel parking lot and turned the instructions over in her hand, checking to see if she had missed something. The box had shown up in a Lake Ontario port, and she had received the strange, slightly oily manila folder, emblazoned with a heraldic crest of a seven-headed dragon clutching a pincushion wrapped around a shield. She had received it at the headquarters of her Task Rabbit knockoff temp job, WizGigs. Grace was also confused as to why the whole story was written on the shipping receipt, or why it was important to rent the pine box a room at this particular Niagara motel, or why it was important to hang a single scrap of lace across the window of the motel room before leaving the box. Oh well, Grace thought as she quickly moved to stop her own questioning and curious mind. Just do this job and go home. Complete the instructions and clock out. Do your shift report and go home, Grace. She felt it was important to not get obsessed with the details of the jobs that came through the teal and purple WizGigs app, lest she waste any more of her time. It was crazy to receive a real manila folder on a WizGigs job, instead of the usual 3,000 or so short text message instructions via the app. This job didn't pay well enough to get worked up over who set up all these instructions, or who was waiting to dig up the motel key she was supposed to... what was it again? Bury in a jar? In front of the Cheektowaga Rock Burger? Or get too worked up over whose black handprints were all over the pine box when it came out of the shipping container in Hamilton? She didn't want to know. She only read the story because, at first, it looked like it was part of the instructions. She found she couldn't stop reading, and this was already asking more of her than most WizGig things did. Unfortunately, Now she knew that there was apparently a lace mummy in the pine box. Grace fished in the folder to find the other strange item that came as part of this job. A single golden coin. What? Put it in the machine at the front desk? Fine. Grace looked for the front desk of the old ratty motel with the melted sign. It looked like no one was around, yet there were fuzzy lights on in some of the rooms. Just a suggestion of people, a completely hollowed out presence. She found and entered the small dusty lobby. There, at the counter, where by all rights there should be an old man ready to give you a leer and a dirty key, was instead a drab, bulbous machine made of brass, festooned with knobs, slots, and a dish. It had the vague outline of a corpulent Buddha statue. The large, cylindrical glass flask attached to the top seemed to house a series of gears and zigzag bulb filaments. There was a number of slots that appeared to take many different coins. There was a slot for loonies, and a slot for quarters, and other larger slots for coins she couldn't quite recognize. She held the golden coin up to each, until she found the appropriately sized one and shoved it in. The machine gave a craggy click, and the gears visible in the glass bulb turned. Orange light flared from within, giving off the smell of beef tallow and cloves. A key clattered into the bowl attached to the desk. When Grace picked it up, she noticed that there was a small scrap of lace attached to it. So, put the lace mummy in the lace room. Okay, Grace mumbled to herself. She didn't want to know. She was just going to load the box into whatever room and not think about how it apparently contained the corpse of a tortured Victorian tyrant wrapped in French alençon, Swiss entredue, and chantilly. She was going to go home and not think about the old lace-covered hands brandishing the golden whip, or the alchemical clouds seething from a beating, glowing purple heart, or the lace tendrils that moved like vines in the dark. She was going to go bury the key at the Rock Burger, eat the Cheesecake Wonder, and pass out. And she would never consciously think of lace again, even as her fingers sneak in to pet the scrap still in her jacket pocket, dancing across the crocheted weave, corporeally delighting in the lattice of white knots, as old as the foam of the falls.
You sound a little taller on radio.
Thank you.
Here's Eugene Chadbourne with The Devil on the Radio.
He was brought up to be scared of the devil. He thought he had that all licked. He thought the angels guided his way, not the devil. So the voice on the radio must be a trick.
This is the devil. Can anybody tell me how I'm coming in?
He said, I can hear you loud and clear. You say, you're the devil. Won't you please tell me who this really is? Is this some teenager high on drugs saying he's the devil? Breakity break now. The door, scared of the devil. There were voices talking tongues in his brain. Could have been a trick, or it might have been the devil. He'll never be the same man again.
And all my friends were vampires. Didn't know they were vampires. Turns out I was a vampire myself in the Devil Town. I was living in a Devil Town. Didn't know it was a devil town. Oh Lord, it really brings me down about the devil town.